And you're very welcome to another edition of the Solid Foundations Property Podcast. The evenings are getting longer and the rain is, well, there's no rain where I am. I don't know about you, Lisa O'Reilly. It's something we're not used to. But anyway, how are you? More importantly, you're very welcome back. You know, we break there last month. Are you keeping well? Loads of our listeners have been texting, wondering, how's Lisa? She's all good, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, we're all good. Yeah, we had a bit of slight mishap last month. I had an antibiotic infection, or an infection against an antibiotic, and an allergic reaction. So I was hospitalised for 10 days. But look, getting back into it there now. So yeah, all good. Back with a bang. And it's the sunny southeast, so the summer's coming. So we're all in a good form.
Yeah, absolutely. Lower bank holiday just around the corner, and all things moving forward in a positive as ever. There's loads of different elements of the property investment world we look at, and also the world, as we're starting to hear, Donald Trump is starting to rank things up on tariffs and everything else. It's good crack. It's just showing you that property is stable. It's simple and boring.
Yeah.
It's emphasized that a lot more, hasn't it, Lisa?
Yeah, it has. I think people saw their stocks kind of plummet. I have a small stock holding, shareholding, and it literally went from a small profit to a pretty big loss in the space of maybe, I'd say, 2 weeks maybe. Now, I was a bit stupid. I probably should have sold because I knew the tariffs were coming and I had an idea it would have an impact on the share price. But it's just, yeah, it just kind of re-emphasizes that. Number one, we can't control shares, stocks and shares. We have no control over the price of them at all. And number two, it can literally kind of just happen more or less overnight. So, yeah, that's exactly the reason why I like property as a long term investment, you know. And I suppose you're the same for it as well.
Kind of in agreement with that. It is a great segue for investors who are thinking about the stocks and the difficulties with it, and why the diversification of the property is obviously something that we pioneer at all stages. We're always open for business, so reach out, have a chat, Lisa. And it's great to see you back. And we didn't tell anyone about your little trip away. But look, this is a very short podcast this month, and I know that you're back and you're recuperating, so I don't want to keep you too long. But we were having a chat, and we were just redeveloping what we were going to do in the podcast and thinking about different ideas. And this actually came from an inspiration from listening to another podcast that I enjoy, was all about, you know, starting out your end game as such and working back. And that's probably something we're all about, you know, going and finding more properties, doing more deals and trying to create the cash flow that we're looking for. Or if it's, you know, if it's the flipping element, which is another aspect, or new builds, whatever it might be. But Lisa, I suppose the question that I get often asked, or some people do ask, is, you know, what's the end game here? So you have to start out, what are you looking to achieve? And suppose myself and yourself have been there. We do look at that and how that works.
Yeah, we do. And I think it's really important to note that when I first started out, it was all about replacing my income and some more. But first of all, my first goal was, look, I need to replace my income in my full-time job. I was an accountant. I had a full-time career as an accountant, and barely, I didn't have any property. I had my own house, and one rental property, but I was about to sell it. And I suppose I made a decision to get into property. But what I needed to do, first of all, was to replace what I thought was to replace my income. But actually what I did was I stripped it back first. And I said, actually, I don't need to replace my income. I need to look at the costs that I'm incurring every month. And I need to see which ones are actually the important ones that I need to cover, like childcare, you know, mortgage for my own home, electricity bills. And I list out all the expenses that I needed to cover, and I said, right, how many houses do I actually need to get in order to how much income do I need to generate from these houses, and how many houses do I actually need to get? So I suppose the first thing, if you are in a full-time corporate job and you're looking to get out of it, it's to kind of, maybe can you scale back your spending in any way if you do really want to give it up full-time, and how many houses do you need to start? And I suppose where a lot of people start, Warwick, is rent to rents. Because you don't need to, you know, have any funding really to start a rent to rent. And that's a good place to start. And I think you've got experience there with some rent to rents as have I still.
Yeah, as you've kind of been pioneering that for some time, and is that a realistic strategy now, Lisa? I suppose the way things have moved around governments and different elements, is that something that, you know, it's great to get started, but is it a long-term element, do you think?
Well, I suppose, look, not rent to rents as such in Ireland. I call them rent to rents because of all the legislation and all the red tape that we have in Ireland. So it's not necessarily rent to rents, but it's probably like rent to HMO, rent to serviced accommodation, that type of thing. So this is where possibly where you take a property from a landlord who's sick and tired of being a landlord, possibly thinking about selling, and taking the property off of them, and, you know, maybe doing HMOs or serviced accommodation in them. So I suppose, look, you need to look into all the regulation that's still there around those two areas. But also that is probably, like, taking regulation aside, that's how you can actually make money from a property, is somebody who doesn't want to run a house as a HMO or a serviced accommodation, and you want to do that, obviously. I mean, you make the margin, the difference between the money you make versus the money you give over for as rent, you know.
And look at that, suppose, strategy and different things. Suppose you start there, and how are you? It's the little daily increment improvements from that. Suppose it's really breaking that down. What are some of the key elements that people should think about doing, do you think, at least on a daily basis? I know I'm constantly looking at property on a daily basis. I'm, you know, reading news, and, you know, on every aspect. But if you're starting out, what would you do?
Well, first of all, don't procrastinate. Just do one. So, like, well, look, let's step one step up, even before that, get some training, or, you know, maybe try to understand what it means to actually run, say, a HMO. So a HMO is a house of multiple occupancy, where you know, you rent out by the room. So if you have a four-bed house, rather than rent it to a family, you rent out the individual rooms to, you know, whoever, students, young professionals, whoever. So try to understand how, number one, to do the deal, and how to kind of manage this subset of tenants or guests or whatever you call them. So that can come from training. So get yourself trained. The other thing then is just do it. That's my biggest kind of thing, is what I see people where they really kind of fail to achieve their goals, is that they procrastinate. They spend so long looking at a spreadsheet and, you know, worried about regulations and, you know, trying to get every T crossed and every I dotted, and actually not taking any action. I find if you just kind of maybe just do it, test the water, there's nothing better than action itself. And start off with one. And look, start off with one or two maybe. And this will give you a really good idea of, number one, have you the time to do it? Do you like doing it? Because people could get into this and realize this is not for them, and maybe the day job is better for them, and that's what they prefer. So yeah, I'd say just get real knee deep in and get stuck in with one or two, and just see, do you like it first, and then you can look to scale up, you know.
And that so that's developing your relationship with the agents, and speaking to people who are in that circle, and suppose that's that comes down with a little bit of confidence as well, knowing what you're looking for. But I think you touched on something very importantly, is the training aspect, you know. So training's getting more popular, people are doing it a bit more, but there's good, bad and ugly in the training sector as well. How would you pay someone to pick the right training, first of all?
Yeah, it's difficult. Like, you know, I've spent money on training that is not great. I've spent money on training that is great. But overall, I've gone in with a mindset that I need to get out of my corporate job. I am going to be replacing my income with this. So I went in as the best student you could imagine. You know, I really went in with an open mindset to it. So yeah, there's all different kind of trainings out there, and I suppose that I did mine in the UK, My rationale behind it was I just didn't think it was available in Ireland at the time. This was about 4 years ago. I was actually wrong. There is some training in Ireland. So I said, look, I'll go over to the UK, do some training. And I suppose, look, if you were considering training in England versus Ireland, there's some good trainers now in Ireland coming on board. And also you do it in Ireland, you'll get to learn the regulations more. But what I find with the UK is when it comes to like social media and advertising and marketing and thinking outside the box, you've got many more people doing it in the UK. So, you know, their ideas might be kind of, you know, they're always trying to find the edge on each other because there's a bigger competition and a bigger market over there. So I think they have the edge on, like, you know, the social media training and the marketing training and that. What do you think yourself, Corey? Do you think that would you agree, or what would you see?
No, I totally agree about training. You're constantly learning your craft at all stages. So I think you have to really either you're going to do it or you're not. And training is part of it. So you have to train, because again, when you're looking at financials and you are looking at different elements, it does take in, you know, you might have experience, like you've obviously the accountancy experience, which is quite good, but some individual might be good at just speaking with people, having a, you know, a conversation with people. Property is a people's business as well. And it's about knowing some of the fundamentals. For me, it's kind of like, you have to find deals, you have to find money. It's the two very important aspects of it. The rest of it is kind of, you learn through time. And as you say, by doing, you learn. And by learning is one aspect, but also you've got to continue to educate yourself, you know, in that strategy. And you can never know enough, I don't think, you know, but it's about really numbing down the things that you really need to know as well, if that makes sense. Because there is a lot of different stuff that comes and you go, you just need to really settle on 2-3 things max, I think.
Yeah. And I think, Porik, as well, the one thing that we settled, like when we first started, we nailed down our area really well. So I think the big thing is find your golden area. So just because you live in a certain area, don't mean to say it might be the best place to start out. So I suppose some of the area, like, so say we call it the golden area. What's the golden area for me? It's a city where there's large population, and because I do lots of HMOs and corporate lets and like renting out by the room, that I need a location where, you know, you've got your hospitals, your university hospitals are great, you know, the universities, the colleges, lots of pharmaceuticals, near maybe an industrial estate that has lots of pharmaceuticals. Maybe near a tech, a place where there's lots of tech, maybe near a place where there's, you know, like maybe financial services, like in some of the places there are in Dublin and that. So I suppose the location is really key, and it's because you need that footfall of people. And then the other thing that I look for in terms of like location is I like to be in a city, and there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that you'll get the refinance. So the banks, when they go to refinance your property, or when you're looking for finance for a property, always keep in mind, what would the banks look for? And it's probably actually good to speak to a mortgage broker before you actually decide to invest in a property, even if you're paying by cash, because eventually you will want to refinance that property. So I suppose, look, will the banks give you money for that location? And what will they give you in terms of a loan to value? So ideally you're looking for 70% loan to value. If you can get that means you can take out as much money out of the property as you can, and then it allow you to reinvest and go again, you know. So it's all about the golden area. And then once you pick your city or your location, make sure that it's pretty close to you, like within an hour's journey, because, you know, there is going to be times when you're just going to have to, you know, drop tools and go to the property. So make sure that you know you're able to get there, or somebody that you know can get there. And then the second thing then I would say is you don't necessarily need to go into the best location. So like I wouldn't go anywhere near the likes of, say, Fox Rock, or, you know, all those D4 in Dublin, say, for example. And the reason being is because whatever the high-end locations are in, say, Limerick or Waterford or Cork. And the reason being is that the purchase price of these properties are really high. And the rental income from these properties, you know, it doesn't, the percentage yield from these properties doesn't warrant, say, spending that level of money on them. So I would say for my strategy, which is HMOs, and that would be to go to kind of like, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being amazing, 0 being a right rough hole, I would go like around the 4 to 5 mark, you know.
Technical term, rough hole, yeah. Yeah, it's funny you suggest that HMOs. I'm looking at a couple of flips now. I'm just looking at the numbers, and we're bidding on one or two of them, and actually you're going, you've got so much, you've got stamp duty to take into consideration, which has gone up to 5% in Northern Ireland and 7% over 125,000, you know, after that. So it's 5% up to 125 and then 7% after that. So, you know, those little nuances, and I'm just going back into that that strategy of flipping has got me really, really thinking about, you know, strategic numbers. What's the profit margin here? Is it a 20% margin you're looking for? A 25%? That's the way I think. And I think that when you sit and have those rules and you go, right, I'm not going any less. If it's a flip, or if you're adding value, or if you're trying to increase it in value, it's knowing those little levers to pull and understanding them. Because if you've got a bungalow, can you put something upstairs in it? If you can go out the side on it, if you've got, you know, I think it incorporates that creative thinking as well. But as you've rightly said, sometimes, you know, those aspects if you're trying to do all of them at the start, it doesn't work. You have to be very, very, I think you have to be very, very focused, Lisa, at the start anyway, don't you?
Yeah, I think just pick your strategy. Start with flips are kind of like an advanced strategy, unless you're a builder, of course, you know. And even then, I'll be honest with you, I'm not mad about flips, right? Because just say, for example, you buy a property for 100,000. We just keep it very simple. You buy a property for 100,000. You put in maybe 30,000 into the property, and it stands you 130, and you're selling it for maybe 170. That's 40,000 of a profit is what you think. But as you said, you've got stamp duty, you've got CGT, you've got, you know, and that's if you keep within the expenses of that. Then you've got selling expenses, like an auctioneer fee. Then you've got double solicitor's fees. So remember, you've got solicitor's fees on purchasing the property, and then you've got solicitor's fees then on selling the property. So actually, the 40,000 doesn't tend to always be that 40,000 profit. It always gets eaten away. And I suppose if I was doing a flip, it would have to be for a lot more than, say, the 40,000. It had to be what, like, you know, it's probably where you've got a really good below market value deal, and it's in a really good location, and you really added value to it, you know, where possibly you've added like up to 100,000 maybe onto the value of the property. What I like about keeping hold of a property is that you basically, if you refinance rather than sell, so refinance means that you go back to your bank, you say, look, I bought this property for 100 grand, put in 30 grand, and now it's worth 170 grand. They will give you 70% loan to value on the new updated value of 170 grand. So effectively, you're taking your money, you're taking your money out anyway, and then you've got this property then forever on to keep on generating your more cash flow going forward. So for me, now don't get me wrong, I've got property there now, and there's probably two or three of them in the portfolio that I've probably made a bad call on, bad decision. The capital value, I'm not getting the capital value for it. Probably paid too much money for them. But what I am getting from them is cash flow, and a positive cash flow, even after paying all of the interest back. So whilst they are cash flowing nice, I probably won't get the end, like, I probably would have made a small loss on them maybe. So eventually I will, probably there's about two or three of them in the portfolio that I will look to sell. But look, would I consider it a bad move? I don't know. Like, I think the only way I've learned that is by actually doing it myself, rather than, you know, someone, you know, it's great to be taught, but at the same time, sometimes you need to just do it to realize whether it's a good or bad mistake, you know?
Yeah. And suppose coming back on tonight's podcast, to this evening's podcast, you're listening back, it's a short one, it's nice and quick, it's just to get you to get you a bit of a focus on, because now it's, you know, you're a couple of months in. Have you got anything agreed? Have you done anything? Have you taken those steps? And it's about breaking it down to daily little segments of what you're going to do, how you're going to start looking at it. And as I said, I referenced one thing about, you know, looking at property, Pal or Daftity, or, you know, all those portals. First of all, that's, and the auction sites as well is quite good, Lisa. Start there.
Yeah, I've not bought on an auction, to be honest. But what I do look on, obviously, a lot is probably the only property, what's it called, like a search engine in Ireland, is Daft. And what I look for on Daft, if you are going looking and you're starting out and you're looking to buy, look for properties where you can add value within the existing footprint of the house. So rather than say, oh, I'm going to put an extension onto this, I'm going to maybe move a few internal walls, especially if they're stud walls, they're upstairs or whatever. And you can just kind of jig around the house upstairs, and maybe you can add a bathroom in. If you can add more bathrooms or more bedrooms into the property, then that could be a good place to start. So I'm always kind of looking on Daft, and I love it when the estate agents put the floor plans into it. They don't always do it. So that gives you a good idea about, like, you know, good ideas of how you can add bedrooms and bathrooms into the floor plans. So I don't ever tend to do the extensions, anything like that right now. I might do it. I've actually just I'm going to be picking up keys hopefully this week, maybe next week, to two properties, and possibly I'll be putting an extension on the back of one of them. But, like, you know, I've done a good few now at this stage, and this will be my first extension. Everything has been done internally to the inside of the house, you know, just to kind of limit my risk.
And yeah, it's just trying to, it's all those new strategies that you're implementing now as you go along, Lisa. So well done. That's fantastic. Welcome to the developer's world. We've been chopping down and putting up, and suppose you're right in the footprint of a building. That's what we do with HMOs. You're really looking at how you can maximize the space, and how that can, you can make it into a nice property. And we're nearly at the end of another one, so which is good. So I am trying to get another one over the line. So, you know, it is one of those. You start off with your end goal. What is the end goal, as Lisa has pointed out, whatever that might be, cutting your costs accordingly, and then reviewing where you need to go. And the first, I think the first thing we'll agree on is getting that education, moving it forward then to your gold mine area, thinking about your strategy, what exactly is going to be. That'll interlink with your cash flow that you're trying to achieve. And, you know, then you bring in your goals, then you bring in your daily habits, then you bring in your daily requirements to meet that goal. And sometimes, oh, it's very simple there, Porrig, isn't it? You know, there's a couple of corners and bumps that we've all had. So I think starting there with that type of a plan. Any others you would add into that?
I think that, like, property can be very, very simple, right? It's not easy. That's the thing. So whilst it can be, like, you can be told what to do, but it's just not necessarily easy to keep the daily grind going, you know, and keep up the, you know, keep the faith sort of thing, you know. So I think that it's just to keep, first of all, stop procrastinating, do one property, say. Start with rent to rent. Don't do what I do. I started with buying property, raising finance and private finance, and then I did a load of those. I was under severe pressure at the beginning because I was learning as I was going as well, and then I went into rent to rents, and I should have started at rent to rents. And they all said, all the training says, start with rent to rent, say, and then move on to buying your own property. I did it the opposite way. I said I knew better. But look, start with rent to rents. Get two or three of them under your belt. They're pretty simple to get. Build relationships with letting agents. Go find your perfect area, your golden area, and then start raising finance. Then the way myself and Porrick, Porrick runs his network. We do this podcast together. We're always on social media, and they're the ways then that we use to, you know, show what we're doing to people and raising finance. Basically, that's exactly, I suppose, what we're doing with this. That doesn't come immediately. You know, I would start with the rent to rents, get your experience up, and then move on to possibly then purchasing property.
And you're right, in the marketing side of things as well. Showing and telling is a massive part of it as well. Show what you're doing, tell people what you're at, and have confidence in yourself, because it is, as you have indicated, it's not really that hard. It's just consistency and getting on with it. I think that's what a lot of people fall down on, and the overwhelm and everything, and I suppose that kind of triggers also. But as I say, your golden goose is just start. I think that's what we're taking off what you've been given the advice, and why not take it from someone who's doing it? And suppose that's the thing, Lisa. That's why there's podcasts now. That's why there's networking groups. You know, there's no reason why when we first started you had to go to the UK and that was that. Get over it. There was no property meets. Well, there might have been one, but there wasn't any that was local to me when I first started, but thankfully that has all changed.
Yeah, and there is, there's a few around. So a shout out, say, to Stephen O'Sullivan runs a networking group in Dublin, the PPN. And mm-hmm. he's always encouraging, he's such a great fella, he's always encouraging any new start, you know, people that are new starting out to come along. It's really informal. You have two speakers every month. I think it's the first Tuesday of every month. And he's always encouraging new people to go. Your networking event, Porrick, I'm sure you're kind of encouraging people to go.
Absolutely. Come, Michael came from Galway off the back of listening. Michael came from Galway off the back of listening to us, and really was setting up a HMO in Galway actually, and just wanted to see how we did it, and you know, learned so much. We learned bits and pieces of him, and that's the thing. Like, you know, there's another one in Belfast that Mary and Chris run, a really good one going for a long number of years. Emer Gurley runs one in I guess Lisburn and Belfast as well in that particular area. You've Paul Green down in Platinum as well. There's a lot online and loads of different aspects as well. So there's no excuses, you know, there's no excuses. And as I say, you just have to get in the car and go, don't you, Lisa?
Yeah, and I think that's it. That's the big thing. It's just you've got to get up and do it. Like at the end of the day, the last thing you want is maybe to go off in a car and go and meet people. But I suppose it all depends on how much you want it. I really wanted it. I really needed it. I really wanted it. I wanted to leave the corporate world. I think some people it's difficult, especially people who don't really hate their job and they kind of like their job and they're comfortable in their job, and they feel like they've got a family and they feel like they've got, you know, loads of kind of financial ties and they can't take the risk because their job is, you know, well paid maybe. So I think that is really, really tough for people. If they're comfortable, if they don't hate their job, and if they're well paid. So it can be kind of it can be a bit daunting to kind of, you know, give it all up. So rent to rents are really a good way to kind of, you know, get in slowly, do one or two. You can do them while you're still working, absolutely. CD actually like it. And then at the same time, then there's nothing stopping you from going for the meets and all the networking events that are on, and that even if you are still working. I would say definitely go along to them. Just listen to people and see what their real life stories are like. So I suppose that would be my advice.
And also, before we leave, we've almost got 10,000 downloads on the Solid Foundations Property Podcast, and that's a huge achievement. So well done to you, Lisa, for your knowledge and people really listening to it and getting in contact. So yeah, it's been an amazing journey so far and loads to come.
Yeah, well done to you, Porrick. You're the one that edits and produces all these, and as you can tell, Porrick is a radio host as well, so he's definitely the main man for the job. We're delighted to get the downloads and the views, and I suppose we just probably need to do more of them. But like anything, we are human as well, and things do get in the way, so we're not as consistent as what we'd like to be. We're definitely jumping back on the bandwagon, aren't we, Porrick? And if anybody has, what's that?
As is, we've got you back now, so you know, you've been.
If anybody has any kind of topics that they want us to cover, as always, or if they want us to bring on a certain guest. Like tax, a solicitor, maybe a fire officer, maybe someone in planning, maybe another investor, maybe a developer, Let us know if you'd like kind of for us to bring someone on. And we ourselves have got good ideas about who we want to bring on as well. But we always love bringing people on just to kind of give our listeners, as you know, a broad range of kind of knowledge if we can.
Absolutely. And of course, this podcast is brought to you in association with City Stays. If you are looking for accommodation for your workers or for even a corporate let, the one and only Lisa O'Reilly will be there to help you. And also my own company, Gap Property Investments, absolutely delighted to help you. If you're looking to invest in Northern Ireland, we have loads of great opportunities to connect as well. So just check us out online. You will find us. But thank you so much for listening to us. Until the next Solid Foundations Property Podcast, happy investing. We'll talk to you soon.